Let us, young and old, join together, as did the First Continental Congress, in the first step in humble, heartfelt prayer. Let us do so for the love of God and His great goodness, in search of His guidance and the grace of repentance. Almighty Father, if it is your holy will that we shall obtain a place and name among the nations of the earth, grant that we may be enabled to show our gratitude for your goodness by our endeavors to fear and obey you. Save us from violence, discord, and confusion, from pride and arrogance, and from every evil way. Defend our liberties, and fashion into one united people the multitude brought hither out of many kindreds and tongues. Endow with your spirit of wisdom those whom in your name we entrust the authority of government, that there may be justice and peace at home, and that through obedience to your law, we may show forth your praise among the nations of the earth. In time of prosperity, fill our hearts with thankfulness, and in the day of trouble, suffer not our trust in you to fail. With malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right as you give us to see the right, let us finish the work we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow, and for his orphans. Continue to guide and sustain us in the great unfinished tasks of achieving peace, justice, and understanding among all men and nations, and of ending misery and suffering wherever they exist. For we are given power not to advance our own purposes, nor to make a great show in the world, nor a name. There is but one just use of power, and it is to serve people. Help us to remember it, Lord. God, be with us as you were with our fathers. May you not leave us or forsake us, so that we may incline our hearts to you, to walk in all your ways, that all peoples of the earth may know that the Lord is God. There is no other. Amen.
Happy birthday to us this week. On Thursday, we celebrate 243 years as a nation that this happened. This nation birthed itself by separating from Great Britain and declaring that we were a sovereign nation, and pledging some pretty powerful things, that we were to be a people and a nation that is under God and with liberty and justice for all that we just spoke. And those introductory words that Raleigh read about this morning early, that reads that we know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we reflect on that this week because it is a birthday. It is a celebration. And no doubt many of us are going to get together and we're going to have parties, and there's going to be food and drinks and fireworks and all kinds of fun stuff that we will do. And we will no doubt, hopefully, take some time as a people to think about what that prayer helped me remind myself of this nation and the greatness of this nation and the foundational principles that we are all put together upon, that are grounded in God and our knowledge of Him and our love for Christ. And so we do that when birthdays come around, especially for the 4th of July. We do that and we think deeply about this privilege that you and I have to live in these United States. And then also I think we wonder, too, where we are, where we are going. Where is the direction of this church? Where are we currently at? What is it we need to be doing to maintain and improve this great nation? That's what we probably should be doing every year as we celebrate the 4th of July, because it's a birthday, and not unlike other birthdays, we do stop and pause and reflect and think and rethink about, in this case, our nation. But broaden it out a little bit and think, too, about birthdays in general. Think about Think about your birthday. Think about, again, the 4th of July here. Or think of the birthday of this church, because that is this year as well. This is 175 years of Pleasant Chapel's existence. And we do take time here when we celebrate birthdays. We look at it as this milestone of time passing and us becoming older. Another year has passed. Just yesterday, my grandson Lincoln turned 4 during the week, and we went down and celebrated his birthday yesterday. And oh, the poor little boy didn't get any attention at all, you wouldn't think. You know, there was water slides and there was burgers and presents and people, and it was crazy. Little guy had a great day, and everybody came and had fun. And you hear people say things at those birthday parties, you know, look how big he's getting, and you know, he sure is changing, and he is. He's just growing up, and we all have birthdays, you know. We all do that. We all celebrate birthdays, and there comes a time, though, at some point in birthdays where you don't make those kind of comments to everybody. But, you know, I hear those every once in a while. People come to my birthday and they say, oh, just look how much he's growing. You know, you can say that to a 4-year-old, but when you say it to me, it kind of hurts. You know, look how much he's changing. You got these wrinkles, hairs turning white, and oh, he's just growing up, you know. And so for us, as we look at our own birthdays, no doubt when we think about things, for some it's easier than others, some it's just a number, and as we get older, it's no big deal. But contemplate that just a little bit. Think about your birthday and some of the thoughts that you have when, you know, the times when people celebrate your birthday, or the times where you just know this is your day. And no doubt you wonder about time. Where did those years go? You know, for me, I got 58 coming up here. You know, where'd those years go? And clearly you stop to appreciate the people that you're surrounded by. And if it's a birthday party and people there, you just, you know, you're thankful for them, that they came and gave you attention that day. And you're thankful that you're surrounded by people that do love you. And then you probably think a little bit about the big events of your life. Usually on your birthday, you kind of think back, you know, maybe another birthday, or some very positive events that happened in those years that you would have had. Or a lot of times it's the negative things. You span that timeline of life out and you think about, boy, what a milestone in my life when this event occurred or this tragedy occurred. And you think about forming your life and your understanding of this whole life in terms of time. And we're thankful for that time. And we are thankful for the many experiences that we have and the people that we've encountered along the way. But if you're like me too, during that time, you get to contemplate a little bit about the inevitability of death. You know, it's another one that came, you know, 58, and the next one's going to be 59, and so on. And for some of you, I know you think that's a pup, and for some of you think, man, he's old. You know, it's all relative. But you do, on your birthday, consider a little bit about, you know, time is so fast. It just goes so fast, and you know what's coming. And you think about that. And you contemplate that. And you also probably think about your faith journey along the way. And you think about when you, in that timeline, when you came to Christ, when you made a decision to receive Him in your life, and when you made other key decisions to give up a little bit more and allow Him to be your Lord, and how that has played out in your life as well. And for me, you know, I think about this a lot too on birthdays. All right, I'm 58 here. When did Dad? Dad died when he was 77. Mom died when she was 88, so I start doing the math, you know, how many years do I got left, you know, and anybody else ever do that? You kind of try to predict if there's any kind of, you know, heredity to the number. Probably isn't, but you think about that, and you think about your life and the brevity of life. And then hopefully what we do as we process this stuff, that we start thinking a little bit about, what am I doing here? You know, I've been here for this long. What is it that I'm doing? And I now realize that this time is brief. What should I be doing? With this time that I have left, what is it should I be doing? What kind of legacy should I be thinking about leaving? And I think those are great questions that we can frame those questions either in regards to how I participate in the United States of America, how I'm participating as an individual in my own life, or how I participate and function in a church whose birthday is this year as well, as we celebrate 175 years. I found a psalm that I thought was very appropriate. That was psalm, not song. I kind of stuttered through that. You're thinking, oh my gosh, you're going to sing. I'm going to leave. No, it's Psalm 90. If you have your Bibles, I'd like for you to look at that. We'll have it up on the screen as well. But there's some great insight to this psalm and how it's so appropriate for today as we think about the 4th of July or your birthday that will be coming up or the birthday of our church that will be celebrated here for the rest of the summer. But the Psalms, just real briefly here, you know, the Psalms as we know it, that big chunk of Bible, right in the middle of the Bible, those are written. There's different kinds of formats. Some of them are poems. Some of them are designed for music. But they probably started to be compiled around the time of David and Solomon because they're the authors of a lot of those. So 1000 to 1100-ish B.C. is when these psalms would have been starting to be compiled. And it probably was a few hundred years later until they got to the form of the ones we have now. So they're pretty old. But what's very interesting about this one in Psalm 90 starts off with and says, this is a prayer of Moses, the man of God. So this is the one psalm that's been written by Moses, which now makes it the oldest psalm in the whole book, because this would have been way before that, closer to 1400 or 1500 B.C. But I thought that was interesting. I never noticed that before, that was one psalm that was written by Moses. And the key line there comes from Psalm 90 and 12. And Moses says, so teach us, speaking to God, teach us to count our days that we may gain a wise heart. And when he talks about, Lord, teach us to count our days. You know, to me, I see that as this is the same kind of thinking about processing what it means to have a birthday. Because we're processing these days that we've had before us and these days that we have yet to come. And Moses seems to be asking God to do just that. Help me understand a little bit about these questions that we've already talked about in regards to time and this mortality of life that we have here, and how is it we should be? Teach us to count our days that we may gain a wise heart. And I think Moses, he's using this because he realizes his own mortality. His time's passing, and ultimately he's seeking God for his wisdom so that he can maybe complete the rest of his life in such a way that would be most effective and pleasing in God's eyes. So I've broken this up in kind of three parts here, and we're going to go through all of this, and I think it just is so appropriate for us to look at this because it fits with our nation. It fits with my personal birthday and your personal birthday. And it fits with our church as we're moving towards celebrating our 175th. He says, Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn us back to dust and say, turn back, you mortals. For 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it is past, or like a watch in the night. You sweep them away like they are a dream. Like grass that is renewed in the morning. In the morning it flourishes and is renewed. In the evening it fades and it withers. This first section of the psalm, to me, what Moses is doing here is he's acknowledging God for who he is. For God being God. He begins to talk about his power. And he talks about for God to be dwelling with his people. This phrase, where God is dwelling with his people. That's a theme throughout the whole Bible. This is God's intention, to dwell with people, that I would be their God and they would be my people. And Moses says, he says that, for God to dwell with his people. And think about where Moses is. Think about what Moses saw. Think about what he encountered in regards to God. You know, he was kind of born of nothing. And you remember the story, he's thrown in a basket and floats down the river and Egypt picks him up and he becomes great. And he gets in trouble there, so he bails out and he kind of goes and becomes nothing, a shepherd out in the middle of nowhere. Until God calls him in that bush. How many burning bushes have you heard about in the history of man? One. It was Moses. Moses encountered God in that burning bush. And he saw all the wonders then that followed then. Because remember what God called Moses to do. Y'all get down there and get my people out of Egypt. Get them out of there. I got bigger plans for them. And he went down and he saw all those signs. Think of the plagues that happened with Egypt and with Pharaoh. And Moses participated in all that. He saw God's power firsthand. And he knew about his dwelling with the people. This promise that God made that he wanted to dwell with his people. And he did it literally with the Israelites as he led them out of Egypt. Remember how that was done? They all got in their camp and they got their tents put together and their Yeti coolers and whatever they took, you know, that they on this 40-year-long journey. And remember, God was with them and he dwelt with them because by day, remember, he was a pillar of smoke. And that told the people where they should go, and they followed him. He dwelt with them. They saw his essence as a pillar of smoke. And when that smoke stopped, they knew it was time to camp. And it was time to travel by night. That pillar of smoke turned to a pillar of fire, and they knew by that light that's how they were to proceed. And Moses experienced this. He experienced this dwellingness, this presence that he would have had with his people. And then later, God still wants to be with his people. He wants to dwell with his people. So God tells him, hey, Moses, build me this tent. Remember, it's called the tabernacle. And they gave him all these dimensions on how you ought to do this thing. Make it out of seal skins and color this purple and make these gold rings and make this thing and all this. And when it was done, God's presence was known there. The Shekinah glory, it's called, filled the Holy of Holies. And his presence was with his people. Moses got to experience all that. And that's what he talks about this psalm. Your dwelling, you are our dwelling place in all generations. He says, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you have formed the earth and the world from everlasting to everlasting, you're God. And boy, I thought about that line there quite a bit this week. Before the mountains were brought forth, before you formed all this stuff. You know, there's one thing that just blows my mind so often is when I start thinking about what science is revealing to us about the cosmos, about the universe. It's just phenomenal. Boy, you want to feel little. This week, I was listening to a guy talk about what happened at the Big Bang. I'm not talking about the sitcom with Penny and Leonard and all that. It was the you know, that instant, that thing. They don't like call it a Big Bang anymore. But when this universe started, that great expanse of time and matter and energy and all this stuff expanded. And this guy was talking about, you know, you go out with a telescope and you look up and you look across there and you see the light from a galaxy that's over there, you know. And this stuff just kind of blows my mind because they said, you know, you're looking at that and that thing might be 13 billion years old, what you're looking at. So if we could instantaneously, we can't, but if I could go from here to where that spot is that I'm looking at, it wouldn't be there. Well, one, that was 13 billion years ago. If I could instantly go there, what I saw happened 13. I can't get that. I can't get my mind around that. And even more than that, physically, the universe has expanded since then over those 13 billion years. Who knows where that galaxy is? And Moses is kind of hitting on that. You know, before all this stuff happened, before that, how do we even talk about before? Because when that happened, time was invented. There was something before. I can't handle that either. There's just something other than that. And that's what he's talking about there. When this happened, you were God from everlasting to everlasting. Whatever happened before then and whatever's going to happen after this whole experience that we have here in this physical realm is over, you are God. Moses is acknowledging God in these first few verses. You turn us back to dust. You know, ashes to ashes and dust to dust. And he says, turn back, you mortals. Pretty cool line there. He quotes God saying, turn back, you mortals. That's this allusion to resurrection. Old Testament saying, turn back. Even though you're dust, turn back to me because you're going to be raised. An idea probably Old Testament folks probably didn't get it. Moses is expressing this concept of the passing of time. How time is moving on and how that really means nothing to an infinite God. He whooshes time away like it's just dry grass. He whooshes it away like a dream just goes away. It's just nothing to God. But to us, it's the big deal. It's the big deal because that's the factor that pretty much dictates us. But here is the big deal, he says. He goes on to this next section, verses 7 through 11. We're consumed by your anger, by your wrath we are overwhelmed. You set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your countenance. For all our days pass away under your wrath, our years come to an end like a sigh. The days of our life are 70 years or perhaps 80, if we're strong. Even then their span is only toil and trouble. They're soon gone and we fly away. Who considers the power of your anger? Your wrath is as great as the fear that is due you. And that's pretty downer stuff there that Moses talks about in the heart of this psalm there. But he identifies the heart of the problem here. This heart of why there is such this gap between our limitations because of time and death and mortality and this infinite life of God. And it's sin. We are where we are and not where we're supposed to be because he calls our iniquities our sin. That's this great gap, this huge contrasting divide that keeps us from the wrath of God. And what you don't see here yet in this psalm, you don't see any kind of talks about mercy and grace and forgiveness or that of salvation. Moses at this point had no knowledge of Jesus, no knowledge of his saving forgiveness that you and I do. You and I have that knowledge because we got the other half of the book. You know, we know the story. And we know this wrath is satisfied by what Christ accomplished on the cross. But he includes that because it clarifies this human problem that you and I have. It is the reason that these days are passing. It's the reason of the inevitability of our mortality. It's because of our sin. Time going to go on, and death she be coming. And we are far from him because of sin. That's this state that we live in. And that's just this truth. I think Moses helps us in this psalm with that. You need to know that. You need to know who God is. And you need to know is why we're not dwelling with him. It's because of this nature that you and I have. So then he says this, starting in 12. He says, so teach us to count our days, that we may gain a wise heart. Turn, O Lord, how long? Have compassion on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love so that we may rejoice and be glad in all our days. Make us glad as many days as you have afflicted us and as many years as we have seen evil. Let your work be manifest to your servants and your glorious power to their children. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us and prosper for us the work of your hands, of our hands. Oh, prosper the work of our hands. Teach us to count our days so that we may gain a wise heart. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us. Prosper the work of our hands. He seems to be saying, even though this it is what it is because of where we are, could we somehow be favorably prosperous for you? Let us to be doing the things that we ought to do in this short time that we have. And I think that's a great way to think about us as we consider our time as a nation. What is it we ought to be doing? How can we be prosperous to do your work as the United States of America, as a collective body? What a great question for us to ask. That's solve an awful lot of the problems we seem to currently be having. Or individually, as we talk about those same kind of questions as they relate to you on your birthday, as you go, gosh, time is coming. What ought I be doing? Give me this heart that I may have wisdom so that I can do the work that you would have me do that would be satisfying to you, the kind of work you would have us do. But then think about us as a church. We're coming up on 175. Raleigh, do I have a sign there with this? Yeah. What do you call 175? Check this out. You know, you got centennial and you got bicentennial. I tried to find the word for 175. Septuquincentennial, Dodrus, Beside, pick one. We were going to put that on a shirt. Which one should we put on there for our 175th anniversary? I don't know. You need to have like a triple extra large to get some of those on there. It's going to be, that's what you call your 175th. But yeah, I don't know about that. But somebody needs to do a little work on coming up with a name for 175th. But no doubt, these questions and how this psalm would apply to us as a church, it intrigues me. It intrigues me here as a little bit as your pastor, as we think a little bit about where we are as a church. Where have we been? Go back to 1844 and think a little bit about how this church so humbly started in a cabin in 1844, cross the street, go to the cemetery, go right about at the end of the cemetery, and there was a house that sat there. Probably a Simon's. I think so. Abraham Simon's, I think, is where they started church there. 2 years later, in 1846, across the street, about where the playground was, there was a wood frame structure built, and it was the first church building that started there in 46. And then in 1883, they built a church. The way I have it figured here, it's probably about in the parking lot here. They built a brick structure there in 1883 and tore down the wooden one. And then just a few years later, they tore that brick structure down, probably because it was too small, and built this one in 1910 using some of the bricks from the original one. A humble start, a humble beginning in 1844 that Pleasant Chapel began and progressed to build this structure and has continued to be in place 175 years later. And so we're going to use here several weeks here coming up and to think about these questions about this church, about where we've been and where we are and where we ought to be going. And we'll culminate this in Rally Day. Will probably be the exclamation point we put at the end of the celebration for this 175th year. But as we do this, I want us to kind of think about these questions as a church, because I think the timing's just right. We use the 175th anniversary as an excuse to think a little bit about where we are, to stop and appreciate this church. It's our birthday, these same kind of questions we would ask on our own birthday or the birth of our country, and to be thankful for the people that have come before us and started this church out. And then no doubt to wonder about the mortality of the church. The building is aging. We are aging. Membership is kind of fading. Will the church go on? Will it die? Will it survive? Will it thrive? What will it do? Questions that we can ask ourselves during this time. What have we been doing? What is this church really about? And how is it that we are doing just that? What was done in the past? Go back to 1844 and think a little bit about how church was run, or 1910 when this building was brand new. What was done then? How was it being done? What of that should we keep? Is there anything we should not do anymore? Is there things we should be doing different? How is it we can ask God for a wise heart, as Moses asked for in his psalm, to move forward? How can God's work, as I quote the psalm, be manifest to us as his servants at Pleasant Chapel? What are we doing? What do we want to leave as a legacy? How can we work now, again from the psalm, so that his glorious power would be made known to his children who are yet to come? I think this is a time where we can allow God to do just that, to allow him to teach us to count our days and to appreciate more fully what it is we are doing here as a church and what it is we can be doing better to ensure the next 175 years are successful and flourishing and glorifying God in all we do. And you know, and already we've recognized some things that we need to be doing different as we've kind of been planning here a little bit about how we want to celebrate our 175th, we felt like, you know, one of the things we could do a better job as a church is not just to think about drawing people here. That's great. We want to draw people here and be part of the family. But we need to think, too, about going out. And you're hearing some of that, about going out and getting involved in our communities to connect with people out there and find people where they are at. And hopefully share our faith experience with them that they would want to be drawn back here. So things where we go out and we help out with other established ministries that are already in place, like Place of Grace or Bible Book Trailer or Habitat for Humanity. These opportunities for our church to not just think about bringing and drawing here, but to be going out. One of the things we can be doing a little different as a church. Also, I think during this time of, you know, we would be reflecting and renewing and perhaps repurposing this church, is to consider where we really are and where we fit in the United Methodist Church. I asked a couple weeks ago the administrative council to get together and to think about making a decision regarding where we are. You know, these are tough times. We've been through this enough. We know that the church is just struggling with many things. A lot of it's peaked because of the stance on human sexuality. But it's affected the church in general and the effectiveness of the global network church in general. And I asked the committee to put together sort of an exploratory committee to see where is it that we want to be. And I'm asking them to make, with the whole church, to make a commitment. Let's stand for something. Let's just not wait with the waves as they go back and forth. Let's make a stance to be with the United Methodist Church and what she's going to do globally, or let's not. But regardless, let's make a decision. And I think that is one of these reflective things as a birthday that we look back and say, you know, we need to make a stand for something here. And you're going to be hearing a lot more about that in the days and weeks to come, because it's an important thing. To me, I look at this as very exciting times for this church. You know, I'm still kind of a new guy here. I'm still kind of the outsider here. And, you know, I come here, and some of the stuff you guys have experienced and seen for decades and decades, you know, to me, I think, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And you know that when I talk about stained glass, and I talk about symbols, and talk about pews, and the nature of this church, that there's such a rich heritage and a rich history here. And I see such potential for this church. And I look for these times here that we consider this birthday time, this dose second potential, one of those, that we could do that we could look at our church and say, you know, we're gonna stand for something, and we're gonna work to seek God's wisdom in what we are doing, so that our work would be pleasing, as Moses said in his sight, that what we would do would be prosperous and productive in this community. So let's do that. Let's consider this birthday of our nation, your birthday, or the birthday of this church, and think about what it is we should be doing. Over the next several weeks, that's just what I want to be doing, is reflect a little bit about where we've been, where this church has been. I'm going to ask a lot of questions for you to contemplate and think about where we should be going and heading, and praying that we would count our days that are left as valuable and wise in God's eyes. Pray with me.